Casey. This is just... is it ever going to end, I guess, would be my first question?
The war on terrorism is a very complicated war, and we have to have, obviously, the mindset to win it, but winning in terms of terrorism is very hard to define. You know, what is winning? I think you can manage terrorism and over, you know, a generation or two generations, and eventually it subsides. We've seen that with the IRA and many groups, you know, European groups. The problem with these extremists is, the extremism is so extreme that there's almost no negotiating with their mindset. If we look at the PLO back in the 1970s, when they were blowing up planes and hijacking planes and things like that, their mindset was, you know, we want a seat at the negotiations table. And to get there, we're willing to do these acts of terrorism. Today, terrorism aren't that. They don't think the same way. Today, they don't want a seat at the table. They want to blow the table up. And that's where the problem is. How do you deal with a group that simply wants to destroy the table instead of sitting at that table?
I don't think you can.
You can't, and you're right. That means we have to lock on to the fact that we are at war, a worldwide war, with extremists.
But see, I don't know if it can be won.
Well, I think the issue is, can we resolve the issue over a period of time to where it's a manageable risk? I mean, we've seen how the Israelis deal with terrorism, and they've dealt with it for decades. I think it is a generational cycle. We need to create environments in the Middle East that are not conducive to creating these suicide attackers. But I should say that, you know, I'm not suggesting that the terrorists that attack today may necessarily have come from the Middle East. They may very well be homegrown out of England. London has been a hotbed for extremist activity for decades. Richard Reid, as an example, tried to blow his shoes up on a plane, and he was indoctrinated in a mosque there. There's no question that we are fighting a worldwide network that is a decentralized network, and that makes it very hard.
Now I'm being flooded with questions now that it's popping into my mind. You brought up the word mosque, and my first thought is are we at war with a religion, or are we at war with terrorists?
Well, terrorism, and a lot of folks in my business sometimes make that mistake. Terrorism is a tool. Terrorism is not what we're fighting. We're fighting extremism, extremists, and you can have extremists from different walks of life. You have political extremists, and you have racists, and you have all sorts of different extremists. This happens to be a religious extremist group that we have to deal with, and that's the simple fact. We are dealing with extremists that are Muslim and that want to create Taliban-type government as a worldwide domination. Over our way of life. When the Ayatollah Khomeini, back during the hostage crisis, when he called us the Great Satan, he wasn't talking about us being evil and what we do. He was referring to our society and the influences that society brings to Iran. That was the Great Satan. We have influence in how they develop and what kind of people they are becoming. And when it interferes with that extremist mindset and their religion, then obviously that's when we wind up in conflict with that religion.
All right, we're talking to Casey Poland. Am I saying that right? Is it
yes,
Poland?
Yes, that's right.
And he's a terrorism expert out of Clearwater, Florida. You mentioned, was it Richard Reid? And he was involved in a mosque in England. Do you think that something has to be done or laws have to change where if they find these terrorists that were worshiping at these mosques, that they somehow could be held accountable? Because I can't imagine that a guy would work alone without somebody else knowing what was going on.
Right. Terrorists don't operate alone. Terrorists operate within networks. And you have to have resources and networks to be able to support any type of attack operation, especially when you're talking about multiple targets within a very short period of time. There's no question in my mind that Reid was supported and aided and abetted by a group or a support network, which is probably a pretty large one. But ultimately, a suicide attacker in the end operates alone. He delivers his payload usually alone.
But can we hold the imams or if I'm pronouncing it correctly?
If they're inciting, we do that with people who incite riots.
Should they be held responsible, the people that are in charge of these mosques and they're looked up to as a religious figurehead and at least do an investigation, find out if they knew or helped in any way, and
absolutely,
have them to be held accountable, not only in England but all over the world?
Yeah, I think if they're inciting people or indoctrinating people to commit terrorist acts, then they should be held accountable. No question about it.
Or if they know that it's going to happen and they don't do anything about it, then they need to be held accountable.
Yeah. Let me highlight something for you, though. One of the things that we're looking at right now in London, and we're not sure this has actually has happened, but if we have had a suicide attacker commit a suicide bombing on a target in a Western country, that would be the first that we know of. And that would be a concern because there is a serious shift in attack methodology, something that happens in Israel and other countries.
But it hasn't happened in England.
That's correct.
And it hasn't happened here yet.
That's correct. And now, when we talk about flying planes into a building, that's very different than indoctrinating a suicide bomber to attack targets. A very, very different approach for the terrorists to be able to complete that task.
And it's difficult to stop.
It's extremely difficult to stop, especially if you start getting more of these and it becomes a primary attack technique. Then you're looking at not only mass transit, but it could be Publix tomorrow. It could be some grocery store or the mall, and that's where it really hits home with the community because it makes them feel vulnerable.
Did you happen to see the Time Magazine July 4th, the story Inside the Mind of an Iraqi Suicide Bomber?
No, I didn't, but I'm familiar with their mind.
Yeah,
so.
you need to pick that up because it is absolutely amazing.
Sure.
They talked to this 20-year-old kid who basically, while he waits to be called because he can't wait for he literally is so excited.
Sure.
And he bugs his commander to consider him for the next suicide mission.
Sure. That's called indoctrination.
Yeah, he's 20 years old. It's unbelievable. He says while he waits, he spends much of his time rehearsing his last prayer.
Sure.
First, I will ask Allah to bless my mission with a high rate of casualties among the Americans.
Sure.
The most important thing is that he should let me kill many Americans. Why are these suicide bombers all usually teenagers, early 20s? Is that because
they're easier
older
people
can't be
indoctrinate?
Brainwashed.
Yeah, it takes approximately 6 months to indoctrinate a suicide attacker. I mean, give or take, depending on the type of person, but for all intents and purposes, 6 months is a good indoctrination period. But once that indoctrination's done, very rarely does a suicide bomber not complete his mission. And that's something for us to pay some serious attention to.
Why doesn't the Muslim community take a stand and speak out about the brainwashing and the killing of their youth?
Well, a lot of it has to do with, some of them actually support that type of approach. But for the vast majority, there's a fear factor, for these terrorists to turn on them. And we see that in all different types of extremists, not just the Muslims, where they will oppress their own population to ensure support or to ensure that they don't stand in their way. So people don't want to die, so they stay quiet. They don't want to be targeted by these folks.
What's going to happen in the U.S.? Or if we find out that what happened today in London was actually suicide bombers? As a terrorism expert, Casey Poland, what do you think would happen?
Well, I think it's hard when you start thinking about this issue because we know already how Al-Qaeda operates. We know what their target selection is. We know usually once they hit, how much time it takes to do the rehearsals and deal with all the variables and everything else, do the intelligence work and the surveillances and things like that, and the dry runs on the target. We know how they operate, yet a lot of things that we should be doing, we haven't done yet. Like our mass transit today, all of a sudden, we're adding personnel to ensure that we have extra eyes watching the platforms and playing undercover officers to watch people. Well, we should already be doing this.
We're not doing that?
Well, we are, but today we kind of increased it to a heightened alert status. Well, when it comes with mass transit in New York and Washington or wherever else, we should have that heightened alert already because we're talking about mass transit attacks which have happened all over the world, Spain being the last one, which was very devastating as an attack. I don't know sometimes why we haven't locked on to the depth or the attention to details that we should be doing when we're dealing with terrorism. And I'm not talking about screening everybody that's going into a train, for example, or something that's not realistic. Day in, day out, the population wouldn't take that. But we should have heightened capabilities ongoing all the time, not just deploying counterterrorism teams on the spur of the moment, especially when we're talking about a cross-border operation. Very rarely does Al-Qaeda conduct two or more operations that are what we consider cross-border operations. Usually it's within the same country, Kenya, for example, and things like that. When they're attacked, they attack maybe one, two, three, four, five targets, but you don't see multiple attacks in different countries at the same time because it takes too many resources. It takes too much time and manpower and money and focus to do that. Now, one operation is usually what they do, but they do it at 100%. They are usually always successful when they pull them off. Sometimes you wonder why we're in a position we are in when we should be at a better alert status all the time in specific critical areas. For example, ports, train stations, mass transit, airports, that type of stuff.
Do we need to shut our borders off? Do we need to shut it down? Don't let people in? I mean, are we going to get to that? So we're going to get so paranoid?
No, but I think we should control our borders. I mean, that makes sense. We've had a number of incidences where terrorists have crossed the border and have been arrested at the border, either the Canadian border or the Mexican border. Palestinians, the PFLP, we've had the New Year's Eve attack or attempted attack at LAX. You know, we know that they use the border. So it makes sense to shut down the border and make sure that people can't cross our borders.
Here's my idea. I think what we need to do is we need to do all our military training along the Mexican border. While we're training these guys, men and women, they're all there so they have that presence.
Yeah.
And in their spare time, they keep an eye if anybody's coming over the border, and then they go get them.
Well, the border is I don't know if you've been out there a lot to see how porous it is, but it takes a dedicated, coordinated effort to be able to stop people from illegally crossing the border. And we're not talking about people that should be crossing. We're talking about the illegals that are not allowed to be crossing. And now we're talking about we have street gangs out there, South American street gangs that are actually suspected of helping Al-Qaeda cross the border. This is a real problem that needs to be addressed.
Casey, let me ask you something else before I let you go.
Sure.
The coverage today, the television coverage of the terrorist attack in London, did you notice anything different about it? Because I did, and what I noticed was there, even though I know it was very chaotic, it was had to be just absolutely frightening, but a lot of that never made it to the television. There weren't constant blaring of sirens and screaming and bleeding people and limbs everywhere. Did you notice that, or was that just me? It seemed
No.
to me it was more controlled, and it wasn't as, at least the media's presentation was much more laid back. I know
sure.
that's a weird term, but compared to here, because you got everybody's got to get it first, and got to
sure.
get it now, and let's
sure.
sensationalize it, and blood leads, and
you
let's
gotta keep
get it
in mind.
Gross.
Yeah, you got to keep in mind though, the Londoners are used to bombings. They've been dealing with bombings with the IRA and other splinter groups for decades. Not so much anymore, but they have got their response procedures down. They have got their folks indoctrinated in how to deal with bombings. So it's not they're much better than us at dealing with bombings. They're down on their procedures. They know how to handle these things. And the Londoners themselves are not as shocked because they've had these experiences before.
It's not being exploited in the media like it is here. They know how to react to it. I get that, but I noticed a huge contrast in the way we cover anything tragic here.
Mm-hmm.
We show you the. I mean, you have to warn people. What we're about to show you is very
sure.
graphic, and
sure.
if you have little children, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
They didn't do any of that, and they certainly could. They could have had a reporter right next to that double-decker bus because that didn't happen underground.
Sure.
And they could have showed all of that. If
sure.
that would have been in America, that absolutely would have been the case. And I think it was refreshing not to see all of that on TV.
Not just that it was refreshing. What I'll tell you is that when we do those things and we show those graphic images, it helps the terrorist cause. It shows to the world that they are still there and capable of, or what we call operationally capable of committing attacks. But more importantly, it shows to their supporters and to their recruitment effort that they are still alive and they are still attacking the enemy, in this case, in the heart of the Western nations. So the message that goes out, and the blood and the gore and the hype, only helps the terrorist cause. So I haven't had a lot of time to watch TV this morning, obviously, because I'm doing interviews, but I can tell you that if it's that controlled in the delivery, then more power to those folks, because it can only help in keeping people calm and focused on how do we deal with this and how do we, you know, deal with our injuries and get back on our feet, dust ourselves off.
Unfortunately, our media doesn't care because they're all about ratings and sensationalism.
Sometimes I feel like I concur with you.
K. Steve Boland, the terrorism expert and the president and CEO of Critical Intervention Services out of Florida. God bless you, Casey. We appreciate you doing the show.
Anytime, guys.
And we look forward to having you on again sometime.
Anytime.
Well, actually, no, I don't ever want to talk to you again, because
when
I do, it's a tragedy. So
that's right.
God bless you, sir.
You got it. Bye-bye.
Thank you.